Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Chris on IMTN Worldwide Radio, and this is Around the ATL, but this is not an actual show tonight, just doing a little test, trying to find out why certain things are not working. So, but in the meantime, I will talk in and out in regards to the Atlanta Hawks. Let's go ahead and get started with this test by bringing in our caller for tonight. Good evening, Jordan. That you?
Yes, sir. It is me.
Right. So let's test this. I got to turn my volume up a little bit here. Now, I do need, okay, so everybody who's watching on the stream, I actually do need somebody to be watching on the stream. So I got to see if I can find somebody. I hit up a lot of people, Jordan, so far on Twitter and on Facebook, but so far nobody's joined on YouTube yet. So
Right now
I'm not using my usual microphone and just using the computer. But I remember the first time we saw that nobody could hear, I wasn't using the microphone then either. So I don't know. But let's see if I can grab a volunteer. Give me a second. But in the meantime, you can go ahead and talk about the audacity of what we saw tonight.
Man, sometimes I'm at a loss for words with this team, man, for real. I mean, it's just like, for one, you know, it reminds me of Chris Tucker on Friday, you know what I mean, when he says we got peanut butter, no jelly, you know, ham, no burger, you know what I mean, cereal, no milk, you know what I mean. It's like we can never have, like, all elements of our team clicking at one time. And it really all boils down to one person. It really does. You know, it's the coach, Nate McMillan. And it's amazing that we still have people out there to defend this dude. And sit here and say, well, is this Nate's fault or was that Nate's fault? I mean, nobody's saying that every single bad play that happened is the coach's fault. But the problem is there's not an aura of accountability with this team. People are allowed to do the same, make the same mistakes over and over again, and nobody, regular guy, is losing minutes because of it. It seems like the only players held to that standard are Jalen Johnson and A.J. Griffin. Like, pretty much everybody else that plays a lot, they're going to play their same amount of minutes. You know what I mean? Good or bad, unless they're in foul trouble or something. And it's just, you know, just for example, looking at DeJounte Murray, you know what I mean? It's frustrating to watch this man go 1 of 5 from three, but it's got to the point where he takes more threes now than he normally makes because that's the shot that he gets standing in the corner. You know what I mean? So he's forced to either shoot the three, standing stationary in the corner, or try to drive all the way to the basket with no screen, you know what I mean, no pick. And like I said, it's just not setting this man up to be successful. Granted, I get it. He's used to playing on the ball. So is Trey. Some people think Trey should be playing off ball more because Trey is the better shooter, but Trey is also the better passer of the two. You know what I mean? And you don't take the best passer in the league off the ball full time. But you know, like I said, the guy I was liking it to is Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade was able to play off the ball with another star, LeBron, successfully, and Dwayne Wade was not a good three-point shooter at all. But the reason why he was able to do so is because he had a coach that knew how to utilize him off the ball. You would see LeBron and Wade running pick and roll where Wade was the role man in the pick and roll. You would see Coach Post Wade up against smaller, if a smaller guard was guarding him. You would see backdoor cuts to where a back screen was set, designed for Wade to cut to the basket where he could get to catch the ball moving and finish at the rim. you would see dribble handoffs for Wade, getting him the ball, coming around the corner, you know, coming around the elbow on the move. By the time he got the ball, he already had momentum going to the basket. You would see him run stuff in the high close and splits to get Dwayne Wade the ball off cuts. So a guy does not have to be a great three-point shooter to play off the ball. It's all about how you design your offense to play to that guy's strength. And we do not do that at all. I mean, we don't really play to anybody's strengths, to be honest with you. I mean, I guess if you could say one person is Trey, because Trey can run pick and roll. But aside from that, we don't really play to anybody's strengths.
Well, as I'm trying to get somebody to, I have one person on the stream already, but they disappeared all of a sudden. Give me a second. I'm copy-pasting this. Murray went 4 for whatever again, 5 for whatever, and, you know, Hunter 2 for 10 or whatever it was, 1 for whatever from three. Wasn't hitting no shots, but AJ only plays 11 minutes. He's 1 for 2 from three. And again, John started 5 for 6 for the game, and I said it. I said in the first quarter on the Facebook page of New Pack City, I said, well, is John going to get any more shots the rest of the game? And sure enough, whole rest of the game, until the last 10 seconds of the game. In the fourth quarter alone, he had 2 shots. He missed both of them. Okay. But what about the third quarter? What about the whole rest of the fourth quarter? And again, it's mystifying to hear Bob keep saying it. Bob saying, you know, we have advantages down low. We need to take advantage of John Collins. Neat. Get the ball to John. John never got the ball again. He was never getting the ball again, because that's how we do.
Nope.
And I'm trying to figure out how that's winning basketball when we have a 10-11-point lead and we don't continue to do what's actually getting you the lead in the first place, taking advantage of a team that wasn't stopping John. We stopped John. This team stops John. Nate stops John. If it's the fifth game of the season, you know, we've talked about this on a constant basis, Jordan, even though we hadn't had a show lately. If it's the fifth game of the season, the ball was taken completely out of John's hands. Every other power forward in the game gets 15-plus shots as a power forward, except for John Collins. He gets 9, 8, 7, 6 shots a game most of the time. And if he does get 12 shots, it's only because it's kind of like an afterthought, because he got all his shots in the first quarter or all his shots in the second quarter, but it's not the whole game. And
right.
How many wins have we gotten from doing it like that? And, oh, by the way, 12th loss of the season now, having 10-point lead or more and counting, okay? At home, too. Again, another one lost out. But we're supposed to be happy. We're supposed to be, you know, it's okay. Everything's fine. It's all good. I can't even say we're exciting or fun to watch. You can't say any of those things. You can't say we're winning. We're at 500. Can we say that? Oh, we're at 500. You know, we're at a pace where we won't even make the play-in at this point. And I think that was possible after last year, and having a whole offseason and getting Murray and seeing Murray and John and Trey in the offseason doing their thing. I could never believe we will be here on the verge of being February, that there's a chance we could lose 40-plus games this season. Never occurred to me, but here we are.
I mean, you're right, because when it comes to being out of the play-in, and I mean not when it comes to making the playoffs outright and avoiding the play-in, we're 3 games out of 6th place. We're only 1.5 games. Out of 11th place, which would knock us out of the play-in altogether. So we're closer to being knocked out altogether than we are to avoiding the play-in and being just a straight-up playoff team. That's not good, sir. That's not good at all. And I feel the same way you feel. Like, I cannot believe we're in the same position. But you know what? I don't know why I even think that. Because, I must be crazy, because the fact of the matter is, I guess I thought that having more talent was going to be able to overcome the coaching. But this coaching is tough to overcome, sir. It's very tough to overcome, because it's the same thing game in and game out. Clippers, I want to say they scored, 36 more points from three-point range than we did? 33 more points from three-point range than we did? that's because our defense is designed to stop the mid-range, because that's the area that we're hanging out in, is in the mid-range area. We're giving up the paint, we're giving up threes, and in this era of analytics, teams want to shoot layups and threes. I mean, it makes no sense. Like I said, my theory is that Nate was so traumatized by the 1996 NBA Finals that he's designed his entire defense to stop Michael Jordan, even though Michael Jordan doesn't even play. He's the owner of the Hornets. You know what I mean? Because that's the way we defend. If you look at, like, the defense in the mid-range area, we're one of the toughest teams for teams to hit mid-range. Like, teams are shooting low against us from mid-range. But that's really not saying much, because that's not the shot that most teams want to take anyway. In fact, we're the team that takes more mid-range than anybody else. And I don't have a problem with that when you have good mid-range shooters and it's a good shot. But you can't keep trading three for two, sir. Like, if you're going to play that way on offense, you got to better stop the three on defense. And we just
and
do
we don't
not
do
it.
That to keep over-helping. And since you got a good coach like Tyronn Lue on the other team, you know what they're going to do? They're going to take advantage of it, knowing that's what we do. They know we're not going
right.
to switch. They know we're not going to do it. We're incapable of doing it. So why would they do it? That's why, like, tonight was amazing, because we didn't give up a lot of points in the paint. We didn't give up a lot of second chance points, and we didn't give up a lot of fast break points. You know why? Clippers didn't have to worry about none of that because they were hitting all the shots. It's like the one thing that always beats us this time didn't even matter, because it's one thing after another, and all these things are fixable. All these things can be addressed, but not with the people that are on the bench right now, unfortunately. And I don't know why nobody can see that, and which is why I keep saying the owner wants it like this, because he sees it. He hasn't said nothing about it. He doesn't care about the losing, obviously, but he also doesn't care about wasting the careers of these young men. He's wasting them, and it's on purpose as far as I'm concerned at this point. Because there's no way you can legitimize having AJ sitting on the bench, JJ not out there dunking on people like he was and everything, while you got people struggling out there. Like, again, like, Hunter is 2 for 10. Legit. 2 for 8 from three. He took 8 three-pointers. Look how many three-pointers we hit as a team. Fortunately, Trey didn't shoot a lot of threes tonight. He only took 2. So credit him. And, again, he kept driving in. That's what I kept saying, right? Why keep taking those shots you're not hitting when you can do the stuff that people can't stop you doing? But why can't we do that
right.
for everybody? Right? So it's kind of ludicrous at this point. And like I said, I'm not going to keep participating in the foolery by going to these games. 2 hours away from me, you know, just to keep seeing, you know, the stars, the Hollywood stars. I saw Woody Harrelson. Wait, what's Woody Harrelson doing at a Hawks game? Come on now. Come on now. What's really going on? Jordan, have you had anybody hit you back on your Twitter so far? Because, Miss D hit me up. But I don't know if she's listening on the broadcast or, well, she's not watching on the stream. I can't tell. But have you had anybody hit up? Because the only way I can test this is if somebody joins the stream.
Right. Yeah, no, I haven't. But maybe I haven't seen anybody say anything, but maybe I have to hit up somebody individually and ask them, can they take a listen real quick? Because, yeah, man. The other thing, you know, you talked about John and the fact that we just totally took the ball away from him. The only time that he actually got his proper shot since early in the season was some of the games during that stretch Clint was out. You know what I mean? Like, some of the games during that time, he actually had a couple of big games and some more games that were pretty good games, because he actually – was able to get his shot more, because even though Okongwu still hadn't developed a three-point shot yet, he can make a mid-range. He does move around a lot more, and he can make a pass to somebody. You know what I mean? And Clint just doesn't offer that. You know what I mean? And so, you know, a lot of people feel like Clint's the key and this and that, but, I mean, he really, to me, is a hindrance, because you have to pigeonhole him into one specific role, and that's pretty much all he can do. And with that, you know what I mean, it doesn't allow roster doesn't allow us to play the John strengths at all. And like I said, the guy sitting in the corner, that's not playing to hardly anybody's strengths at all. And you mentioned A.J. Griffin. I mean, let me just look at some numbers real quick here. Okay, 49% from the field, 1% from three, 91% from the free throw line. But yet, we just refuse to play this guy major minutes. We refuse to play him down the crunch time, even if Dre or Bogey is struggling. It's like, who plays in crunch time, who starts, is based on seniority. It's not based on who has the hot hand. It's not based on who gives us the best chance to win. It's you've been in the league longer, so you get to play in the fourth quarter. You've been in the league longer, so you get to start when Dre is out, or you get to start, you know, when one of our guards is out. And so he will start Aaron Holiday when guys are out, as opposed to starting A.J. Griffin. I like Aaron Holiday. It's no knock on Aaron Holiday. He's a very serviceable player. But you got probably one of the most efficient rookies in the history of the NBA, and we act like we don't want to get a man minutes. On a per 36-minute basis, sir, A.J. Griffin is averaging 17 points, four boards, still in the half, per 36 minutes that he played. So he's very efficient. And if he actually played more minutes, he could be a 17-point-a-game guy. But we just refuse to play him in more minutes. We're going to make him sit on the bench, you know, for a lot of his first year, you know what I mean, regardless. I'm surprised he ain't been in College Park yet, to be honest with you. But
that's the other thing. So, you know, when it comes to that whole premise of what, you know, G League is supposed to be, we're not even doing that right. So what are we really doing then? You know what I'm saying? It's gotten to that point where nothing makes sense whatsoever. And I'm trying to figure out, how did we get this bad, like this far off from, like, how do you regress two seasons like this? And what I said is, and I've said it in my articles, I've said it in all my shows, I've done it in the specific shows that I've broken everything down. You can't continue to have the path that we're going and not fix the obvious. When you have a player like Murray on your team, you have a player like Trey, and both, that's why I wrote that article about being a one-dimensional team. How can you let that happen, having Trey and Murray on the same team, and then you have John? And to not take advantage of everybody's strength and not being able to figure out how to do it, and then, okay, well, not even that then. What about just fixing the defense? You mean to tell me you don't want to take the challenge of just getting the guys straight when it comes to blocking out, getting back on defense, knowing how to switch, knowing how to rotate, knowing how to play zone defense? It's embarrassing when we play. I turn it off. I don't like when we go in the zone because it's so embarrassing, because we can't do it. We don't know what we're doing out there. And tonight we overhelped so much, we left the Clippers wide open threes again and again and again, even the ones that we missed. And it was just embarrassing. And it's just like, we can't do anything of the basic nature when it comes to basketball. And it's obvious, especially to anybody who's actually played basketball, which is why I do my Sunday night basketball videos after I play basketball all night long, and talk about, there's no way after 35 years of playing basketball, I could get away with just standing in the same spot behind the three-point line all night, 24-second clock. There's no way. It's never happened, and it never will happen. I'll be playing basketball until I'm 60-plus years old, and I'm never going to just stand somewhere on the court doing an offensive possession. I'm either going to slide over to an open spot, I'm going to go down low, I'm going to post, I'm going to set a screen. I'm doing something within that possession to help my team win the game. I'm not going to just sit and stop somewhere and hope I can get the ball. It's never going to happen, but that's what we do on our team, because that's the only thing we've been trained how to do. We've been told to do it. We ain't been told to do anything else. And it's egregious to not have AJ in the game where nobody's hitting shots, but AJ is one of your best shooters. He ain't in the game. Put Aaron out there. Aaron, we got four or five players that shoot 38% or more from three, but you're going to keep letting Hunter and Murray keep shooting threes? That's ludicrous to me at this point. And we won't set not one screen for nobody. Make the shot easier. You know, we won't do any of these things. And I haven't done a show in a while. I got some of these things, you know, queued up and things of that nature. And we do our live show again. But it's just, tonight is just another example of, like, how many losses do we have now? Is it 24, 25 losses now?
It is 25 losses. And now we get ready to go on a West Coast road trip. You know what I mean? So, I mean, if we don't get it together on this trip, we're going to come back from this trip below 500 again.
Somebody just said they started doubling John, so he passed it out. Come on now. They doubled him every time? No. Oh, my goodness, people making
it. It's fine to make the right play, but like I said, we just aren't playing to this man's strength. Not playing the Murray strength. So Murray has just, I think Murray has just resigned himself to the fact that, okay, like four or five of my shots every game are going to come from the three-point line because this is where he has me playing. Like I said, I've seen the body language on Murray. I know that he's not happy about just standing in the corner all the time, but that's what this calls for, then that's what it is. And watching us play, in oftentimes in crunch time, is so frustrating, especially when we have a lead, you know, late in the fourth quarter, because it's like we stop doing the things that got us the lead. We start milking the clock, slowing the game down to a crawl way early, and we start going iso ball. And people, you know, wanted to blame Trey for that, but it's not Trey, because we've had games where Trey was out. And the play of choice down the stretch was iso DeJounte. We even had a game. Well, it was iso bogey down the stretch, you know what I mean, of a game that we lost. So, obviously, that's what the coaching staff is either calling for, or if at the very least they're allowing it. They're okay with it.
Yeah.
Because it's the same thing, game in and game out. And, you know, it eventually gets to a point where, you know, you're doing the definition of insanity. You're doing the same thing over and over again, except expecting different results. But instead, you get the same result most of the time, a blown lead. Now, sometimes we're able to hold on and win the game. Sometimes, a lot of times we aren't. You know what I mean? But regardless, we almost can never just finish anybody off. It doesn't matter how many points we're up. You can't even enjoy a large lead at the half as a Hawks fan, because you know at some point that it's coming, that this lead is going to dissipate, and it's going to get to a tense point in the game to where we have a possibility to lose this game. The last win against Oklahoma City is a prime example of that, Chris. You know, dominated that game for a stretch. You know what I mean? Took a big lead, and then next thing you know what I mean? Here goes the lead again. If it wasn't for a couple of missed shots that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander missed, shots that he was making.
They would have won that game. We lost that game. I mean, for all intents and purposes, except for a bonehead decision at the very end, they had all the momentum. They came all the way back. They had that game won, and they knew it. And we just got lucky. And that's not how we need to be winning games, is getting lucky. You know what I'm saying? Right. Look, think about this. We have played 20-plus games. I have to go back and do the official numbers again another time. But we have played 20-plus games, and we've lost all the leads in all of those games and held on to win about 10 of them and then lost 12 of them. That's not winning basketball. You can't win playoff series like that. You can't win no championship like that, because every team you play knows they can beat you, basically. That's what they're saying. And that's kind of scary. That's kind of scary. I don't know what to say, Jordan. I've hit up a lot of people. No, but as postman that struggles to be steady and have control in the post, it's hard to give him the ball every time. Well, hold on a second.
But the thing is, though, why we always gotta, we don't have to give him the ball in the low post all the time. Why don't we play to the high post some? I mean, that's where you can get the ball to a guy like John and then run Murray on some type of dribble handoff off of that. That's where you can run a guy like Murray on a curl, who's a good mid-range shooter. I mean, Rip Hamilton made a living running off of curls, knocking down mid-range. Why aren't we doing that for our guys that shoot the mid-range well? No, they got to get it on their own. If they're the primary ball handler, they get one pick, and that's it. You know what I mean? And other than that, they got to get it on their own. And teams, like you said, they know this. They watch film. They're like, all right, we got an easy night tonight, guys. We just got to take this away and this away, and if we can do that, you know, we can beat these guys. And so, you know, it's just ridiculous, man. We don't have any creativeness to our offense. Any innovation to our offense. We play crazy on defense. I mean, it's just really a disaster, sir. It really is. I mean, if we didn't have the talent we had, we wouldn't even have 25 wins right now. You know what I mean? If we didn't have the talent that we had.
Go ahead,
sir.
No, I was just, that was another point of mine, is that it's just the sheer talent that we do have on the team that's kept us from being the bottom seller, like Detroit or something
right.
like that. You know, but,
right.
oh, guess what? We barely beat Detroit. We can't beat Charlotte. Right? We can't beat Orlando. Like, we can't beat any
Dude,
other
we
team
have,
that's
we
allowed
have
us
four,
to beat.
We have four losses combined to the Hornets and the Bulls. The Hornets and the Bulls. The Hornets
can't
and the Bulls, neither one are even in the playoff, even in the play-in right now. And we
make
got four
up.
More losses to those two.
And then of course, there's Houston.
Right.
And it almost got swept by OKC. So, you know, it's at the point where it's just the principle of it all is that you can't beat the bad teams or the middle teams or the good teams. That basically knocks you out the playoffs every time. You got to beat somebody in that spectrum. And it should be at least
right.
the teams that are technically worse than you, and we can't even compete on that level. Every team in the NBA knows that you are in the game with the Hawks. That you, no matter what the score is, you can come back on the Hawks. And that's a bad reputation to have right there. And it's a reputation, believe it or not, for people who don't want to look at it. The numbers have told you this. And again, this is a test show. I don't have all my other usual stuff queued up or anything. But, again, we lost three straight games at a certain point with 15-point leads or more, right? That can't make that up. Those are three losses right there, you know, besides the 12 losses that we had as a total of 10-point leads or more. Then there's the losses that we had 5 or 4 or 6-point leads as well. That next game in December, by example. All the teams that we got that we allowed to score 50 or more, 60 points, 70 points in the paint with Clint playing, all the second chance points, all the fast break points, those things beat us every single time. You know, all these things can be fixed, and to not fix them again is purposeful. There's no reason not to want to fix them. To keep saying, oh, we don't have enough practice time, that's an excuse, and it's a lie. There's plenty of practice time. There's again, I don't believe we're looking at any tape. How can we be looking at any film after games, after a game like this, where all we did was overhelp? Look at the rotations, how there were no rotations. We know that. But look how worse they were tonight against a team that had won 4 in a row. We knew that coming in, right? Got Coach Lou on that other side, championship coach. And what did he do? He put that ball in motion on the basis of these guys don't know how to stay with their man. They're never looking at their guy. So if we just move to the side, just slide, 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 just like that song, right, we're going to have wide open shots. And even if we miss them, it's a wide open shot. Let's do it again because they can't stop it. And what did we do? We didn't stop it. Because we can't stay with our man. We don't know how to switch. We can't call out when to stay with man and or just fight through that screen. And we don't know how to rotate. We don't do it. And then we overheld. We had 2-3 people on the same guy multiple times tonight, especially that fourth quarter. Jackson, he was just getting
right.
wide open shots, doing foolery stuff. Just out there having a ball. That's what Bob said,
yep.
right? Having a ball. It's
yep.
That's why I said on Twitter, we need to have
Jackson.
As coaches, because I'm just kind of done with them telling, just like I be saying what we need to do, they be saying exactly what we need to do, and we do the opposite, and we lose every time. All right, so Dominique is watching on YouTube. So let's see if he go ahead and talk about something, Jordan. Let's see if he can hear you.
Reggie Jackson, 4-7 from 3. Nick Batum, 2 of 3 from three. Luke Kennard, 3 of 3 from three. Kawhi Leonard, 5 of 10 from three. That's 19 as a team, and I didn't list everybody, but those are the guys who shot really well.
They hit 19 of 39
threes. Almost 49% from three. Meanwhile, you look at our team. John Collins, 1 of 3. Hunter, 2 of 8. Trey, 0 of 2. Murray, 1 of 5. It was, like you said, credit to Trey for not taking a bunch of them. Bogey, 1 of 4. In total, our threes add up to 7 for 27 from three, 25.9%. So 26% to almost 50%. That's a losing formula, sir. It's a losing formula. You know, if they're not going to be a great three-point shooting team, that's fine. Don't shoot so many of them. But you got to be able to stop the other team from making them if you're not going to be able to make them. You got to. You keep trading 3 for 2 over and over and over again. You're going to come out on the bottom end of that math every single time, sir. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just so frustrating, man. And I just don't understand, you know, well, I do understand. This coaching is the main issue of it. There are some other issues. Our spacing isn't quite as good as it was last year. Our shooting isn't quite as good as it was last year. But there again, if you change the design of your offense, fit your new personnel, then it wouldn't be the issue that it is. But, you know, Nate's an old dog, and he ain't learning no new tricks. And, you know, as you stated and I stated and several other people online have stated, the same complaints we have about Nate are the same complaints they had in Indiana. They're the same complaints that people had in Portland. Same complaints that was had in Seattle, according to Jelani McCoy and Matt Barnes. And so it's clear at this point the man is not changing. He's not doing anything different. And so it just is what it is, man. He's got to go.
So Dominique says the first time before I plugged into my mic, he couldn't hear you. So I just plugged it in. I'm waiting for him to respond to see if he can hear you now. I don't know. He hasn't said yet. But that's why I said a couple of days ago that people are fighting for Nate as if he's won multiple NBA championships or multiple NBA conference championships in the West or in the East or multiple playoff series victories, plural, with multiple teams or has had multiple 50-win seasons or division titles and things. None of those things are true. In Seattle, nope. Portland, and Indiana. Indiana, he was swept 3 or 4 years before getting fired in his fifth year. In Portland,
the Pacers fans hate him, sir, because they said they had a team that was on the brink of being a finals team, and he destroyed it. That's what I saw this the other day by a Pacers fan saying that, look, I feel for what the Hawks are going through because we had a team that was almost there, and he totally destroyed it. And they say, you know, they were rebuilding after Nate was done. And it goes to what Jelani McCoy said. He is the type of guy who will burn the whole house down on the way out. That will wreck the whole show. And, you know, we cannot allow him to do that. We need to get this man out of here. But, like I told you on Twitter earlier, it just seems like they're going to allow him to coach this thing out and retire. I guess they care more about their dignity, his dignity, than wasting in the season. And so I'm pretty much resigned to the fact that this is going to be a wasted season. I don't know. Maybe we will make the play-in. I tend to think we probably will make the play-in. But I don't know if we get out of the play-in and get to the playoffs at all. You know what I mean? So maybe that's for the best, though, Chris. Maybe, you know, maybe we need to miss the playoffs and hit the lottery. You know, maybe we can finally hit the lottery.
Who is that going to fix, though? But see, that's the problem. That, as I was saying,
well,
Portland.
Out of
6 seasons in Portland, the first 3 didn't make the playoffs. The last 3 did, but they got knocked out first round 3 straight years. And of course, in Seattle, only made the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. And I'm just trying to figure out. Okay, so are we keeping Nate because he's won 750 games? And I'm like, that's cool, Mark, and everything. But if you last in the league long enough and you win at least 35 games a year for 20 years, you can win that many games.
Right.
At a certain point, you got to be able to compete for a championship. Because that's the only thing that matters. You've got to win a championship. You've got to at least be in the finals. And to not ever have a chance to actually really do that on a regular basis, when you actually have a team that can do it, like you said, Indiana had some really good squads there, and it was just dismantled for no reason. And here we are, have a competitive team in the Eastern Conference, this Eastern Conference, and we're fighting for play-ins every year. That's not what people are getting season. That's not why people should were supposed to be getting season tickets per wrestler, the owner. You see what I'm saying? And so getting season tickets to watch us fight for play-in spots and getting embarrassed by teams that are not in nowhere near the playoff line, I'm trying to figure out how any of that is positive at this point. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it. All right, Dominic. Appreciate it, man. All right, so Dominic says he can't hear you both sides, Jordan. I'm going to see if I can get somebody else. I just did some other adjustments as well. So I'm going to see if I can find somebody. But, yeah, man, it's kind of scary at this point because, like I said, at a certain point, Trey does have to start thinking about things. John probably should be demanding a trade for real because they've been trying to trade him for 17 years, and he hasn't played here that long. So at a certain
point. Yeah, I don't understand that either.
When is the – okay, I had hit Clifton. He's at a sports bar right now.
Think we ought to just – hold the line as far as trades go. I mean, if there's a little minor move here or there, like if we could move Bogey, for example, I mean, I'm for moving Clint, but, I mean, that probably won't happen. I think we should just hold the line because let's see what a new coach can do with these guys before we go selling talent and downgrade. Now, you're telling me we could package some stuff together and go get, like, Siakam, Pascal Siakam, who I keep reading is available. Then okay, I can understand, you know, a move like that, adding another all-star. But just trading guys, just avoiding luxury tax, or just trading guys just to try to find a different fit under this coach, it doesn't make any sense. Because unless we're getting a better ball player than who we're trading, it really doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? When another coach could come in here, retool this thing, design an offense that's more than just ISO and pick and roll and dudes standing in the corner, and we could actually be successful. I say it all the time, you know. And this is the thing I don't understand about Travis Schlenk. He came from Golden State but decided to go hire basically the Philadelphia 76ers defensive coordinator, supposedly, in Lloyd Pierce. You know what I mean? Like, why? Okay, meanwhile, Golden State is running the offense that combines the principles of the Phil Jackson Takes Winners triangle offense. It combines those principles with the Popovich Bud Spurs offense that we had a lot of success running here, and also has elements of the Phoenix Suns offense under Mike D'Antoni, though they never won a championship, is always one of the top offenses in the league. You know what I mean? But meanwhile,
yeah,
we're running this simpleton cat-in-the-hat offense. It doesn't make any sense, Chris. Why wouldn't Schlenk want to bring somebody from Golden State, where he came from, to try to emulate that similar type of success? Everybody said he was drafting young Splash Brothers when he drafted Trey and Herter, but yet he goes and brings in a coach that doesn't even coach that style. I just don't get it, Chris. I don't get it. You there, Chris? Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. But, I mean, I don't know. The other thing I don't get is how we can replace Travis Schlenk. We fired a whole bunch of other guys in the front office, all of which we had just gotten contract extensions, but we act like we can't fire this coach who just got a contract extension not too long ago. Like, why? I mean, if you're going to pay these other guys for not being here, why not just go on and clean the slate? Let me switch them off my Bluetooth to my speakerphone and see. I still can't hear you, Chris. I don't know what's happening now. I heard it mute, then unmute. I heard the muted, unmuted. That's all I heard. still can't hear you. I can't hear anything besides the prompts. Yeah, I can hear the sound effect. Yeah, I heard the gunshots followed by the bird. Still nothing. Georgia beat South Carolina. That's good. Yes, I was just checking some scores here, sir. And I see the Georgia Bulldogs did get a victory in basketball today, 81-78. And speaking of the Georgia Bulldogs, that is the game that I'm interested in getting one of those seats from you, is the Minnesota Timberwolves game. Because if I am not going to watch the Hawks play ball, at least I need to watch a darn good dog. Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards. I have yet to see him play live, so I'd like to see him, you know, me being a UGA guy. But aside from that, I can certainly understand why you want to sell some of these tickets, sir, because, I mean, like you say, you don't have time to be traveling all that time, making all those provisions just to watch these guys do the same foolishness night in and night out. Yeah, I can still hear the prompts, Chris, but that's about all I could hear. But I can hear you perfectly when I hang up and go to YouTube. So there's got to be something going on with the Blog Talk system. Hopefully we can get this fixed, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if anybody's able to hear me at all, because we definitely got a lot to talk about. Definitely want to talk about some dogs. Definitely want to talk about there's a lot of stuff to talk about. I want to talk about these Falcons defensive hires. I see that we hired the other guy who I thought we might hire at defensive coordinator, Coach Gray, to coach DBs. And so it looks like we got a lot of homie hires going on. Doesn't mean that they aren't good coaches, though. So I give them a chance. We'll see how they go. This Nielsen guy, you know, he is spoken very highly of in New Orleans. And he's supposed to be developing defensive linemen and particular pass rushers. So if he can develop these young pass rushers we have, like a Arnold Ibiketti, like a D'Angelo Malone, and whoever else we bring in this particular draft, free agency, and like a Lorenzo Carter as well, who's our second leading stat guy behind Grady Jarrett this year, then it will be a good hire, sir. Another thing I want to talk about, Chris, when we do our show, is how in the world the players voted LaMelo Ball three spots higher than Trae Young. Trae Young has played 45 games. LaMelo Ball, last check, had played 22 games, 23 if they played tonight. So when I looked, it was 44-22. Trae played double the amount of games as this cat, and somehow the players voted Melo Ball three spots higher. Now, one of the things they always said about the All-Star starter voting is the fans, you know, they took it away from strictly the fans and made it a thing where it's part media, part players, part fans. Well, the fans know what they're doing when it comes to voting over the media. Over the players, excuse me. Because it's ridiculous. The fact that the players would vote a guy who played half the games three spots higher. Maybe they need to take them out of this equation if that's the way they're voting. because that's just ridiculous. And the other thing I like to see with the All-Star game, Chris, is I like to see them put the center position back on the ballot. We got enough good centers in this league that they could put a starting center in the All-Star game. Here you got Joel Embiid, who is out here destroying the back-to-back MVP tonight, and yet he's not even starting the All-Star game because you got three forwards starting up front. Put the center position back in the ballot for the starting lineup. Now, you ain't got to pick no backup center if there's not a backup center worthy of making All-Stars. So, you know, it ain't got to be like the old days where you take a Jamal McGlure just to have a second center or whatever. You know, you could run forwards as a backup if there's not a worthy backup center. But there certainly needs to be a starting center spot back in the All-Star game. Big men still matter. The center position still matters. And you have two MVP candidates at center in each league, the back-to-back MVP and the guy who was a runner-up, you know, and Joel Embiid. So there's no reason why the center position should be left off the ballot as a position, as a starter, Chris.